Welcome to Burning River Radio. Joe is not paying attention. It's Monday night, not our usual recording night.
All right. I'm going to pull a Tippa and say, cut this one out. No, yeah, I was looking at something else. Welcome to Burning River Radio. I'm Joe Koblitz at Burning River BB. I'm joined as always by Justin Latta at JL underscore baseball. And I have to say, Justin, I am frankly appalled and disgusted, and I can't believe that they would do this, that the players called a strike the game before, the day before game five in the ALDS, be the first year without a World Series, 1994. I am just disgusted.
Terrible.
It's terrible. I can't believe it. They're so greedy. Greedy players. So what's been going on in your life? I've been just kind of hanging out.
Yeah, it's great. I don't know what to do with myself. It's been...
I went to the mall last week.
A long week.
Started going to AFL games.
That's baseball, I guess.
Yeah.
I went to a wedding. That's kind of where I'm at. I'm not really... There's no baseball-related things to do around here, except for watch the scoreboard on the internet.
Okay. Yeah, I went to a football game yesterday.
Yeah, I haven't gotten that low yet.
Saw the Cardinals play the Buccaneers. They won.
If I go to an NFL game, you know I've really hit rock bottom.
The options we have here in Arizona?
Well, I think your options in Arizona, but if I go to a football game in Cleveland, you know I've hit rock bottom.
Yeah. So that's the whole show. I think we're done. Kidnapped.
It's a great we're season. Done, that's it. Yeah, that's it, yeah.
Show's over.
All right.
Unless you want to talk about that other thing.
The other thing? I guess we can talk about that other thing.
I tweeted this morning about Michael Brantley, and actually I wrote an article about Michael Brantley this morning, and people vehemently disagreed with me.
I saw that.
Which is so funny. I don't base anything on loyalty. In my personal life I do, but not in baseball. It's a business. I mean, if you had two guys that are equal to each other, and you're like, this guy here, there's guy A and guy B, and they're entirely equal, 100%. You know, same age, same talent distribution, same cost, and one guy's been playing for you for 10 years, and the other guy's been playing for someone else for 10 years, then you go with the guy who's been playing for you for 10 years. Then it's a difference maker. Or even if they're similar players, you go with the guy who you've been with. But otherwise, I go base things on all the different variables. You've got the talent. You've got what they have done. What you expect them to do. The money that they could potentially be owed. The competition with other teams. And in this particular case, talking about Michael Brantley's option, first thing, I think a lot of people are misinformed, and I tried to inform as many people as I could today. But it's...
It offends people. Be careful.
What's that?
It offends people if you call them misinformed. Be careful.
Well, I don't care about offending people. I didn't call you misinformed, so no one else is listening to this. But so he's got an $11 million option, but a $1 million buyout. So that one million is a sunk cost. That's gone. So you can take that out of the $11 million and say it's like bringing it back for $10 million, because you got to throw away that sunk cost. A player the caliber of what Brantley did in half a season this year is worth at least $8 million, probably $10 million for what he did in 90 games this year.
I would probably say six, but yeah.
Yeah, salaries are getting up there. You can't get a starting outfielder for less than 14, so.
Are you talking about if you're talking about over 90 games, I think, I know you had 1.6 F4. Last time I looked, I think the cost of a win, which isn't exact, obviously. The cost
well, it's tough because
was like six or seven. I think it was closer to seven.
So 7 million per win. Yeah. So he's about a $10 million player just for half of a season.
That makes sense. Okay. Yeah.
And in this particular situation, it seems obvious that they're going to, because they already said they're going to, without officially doing it. They said they want him back this year and in the future. And the only way that's going to happen is if they use the option and then sign him to an extension. The people who are saying, like, no, they should sign Santana first and then get Brantley. You can't do that because Santana could sign an extension today, but he can't hit free agency and then sign before they use Brantley's option. They have to use Brantley's option before Santana officially hits free agency because Brantley has to have that option to also hit free agency. So they have to make that decision very soon. On him and Josh Tomlin and Boone Logan. I think those are all the options that I can think of at the moment. Another reason this comes up. This is in over a week or about a week, long enough that there have been a couple of games since the last time we talked. And I don't think anyone deserves blame. I don't think anyone deserves any blame for what happened in the ALDS. And I think that makes it suck more. A lot of people want to say they choked. But you're going to tell me, like, and that's what that idiot that keeps talking about clutch stats to me and doesn't know what the fuck he's talking about. So you're going to say Kluber choked. Right.
Wait, what clutch stats is he trying to say exist?
Well, batting average with runners in scoring position. But this is a little bit different. Because you're talking about, like, choking. When you say a guy chokes, this means he can't stand up to the pressure, that he cannot play at the highest stage. Well, do you remember the World Series last year? Kluber pitched three times and was fantastic at least twice.
Yeah, it's recency bias.
He was great in the ALDS and ALCS last year. So to say Kluber choked is saying that he isn't good in high pressure situations when we already have seen him in higher pressure situations be phenomenal. So that's a silly, really silly thing. And on all of them, like Jose Ramirez choked. No, he was in the World Series too. You're acting like these guys have never been there before. They've been there. And they were fine. So they didn't choke the second time around. To say they overlooked the Yankees, maybe a little bit. But I don't think that they overlooked them to the point that they lost the series. I think it was... like I said, I don't think you can blame any individual person. I wrote an article about it the 2 days after the ALDS ended. So if you want to go back and look at all my individual reasoning, you can see it there lined out. Why... Like, it was more of just, like, it sucks and it's over, but you can't really blame any individual person for it.
I mean, you can look at Ramirez and Lindor for having four hits total combined between the two of them.
But what could they have done better? I'm talking about intent, preparation, that type of effort. And I think those things were there. This is another thing I hit on was Ramirez against Tanaka. He looked awful, and he was swinging at pitches all over the place. The rest of the series, he didn't have a swing and miss in the lower part of the strike zone. Like I looked at all of his, What? Oh no, everybody looked at Santana, but that was it. But no, so I looked at every at bat after that because I was under the impression like, oh, Lindor and Ramirez were swinging at everything. But I looked at those at bats after that game against Tanaka, and they really weren't that bad. They didn't have a lot of swing and misses. There was probably some batting average on balls and play luck for those guys.
There was for Lindor. He lined out twice pretty hard.
Yeah, so there's a little bit of that. Of course, Bruce and Roberto Perez probably had a little in their favor. It works both ways, obviously. I even like Lindor had that home run get robbed by Judge, which in a normal ballpark is probably an out, maybe a double. In Yankee Stadium, it would have been a home run, so it cost the Indians at that point.
That would have been an out anywhere else.
Yeah, I think most, and they give Judge too much credit for that because there's so little range there. Like, if a decent right fielder would just get back to that ball and be under it. You know, it's not like he made some super athletic play. So there's really no, it's not like last year in the World Series where you could really point to, like, this play really cost the team. There were no real decisions, I think, that really killed the team other than maybe having Michael Martinez on the roster at all. It shouldn't have got to that point in that game. It shouldn't even got to that game. They should have won it before then. Talking about last year.
Oddly enough, it went the same way as the World Series because they're up 3-1 and they lost a low scoring game in game five in Chicago. Came home, played a horrible defensive game six and got blown out, just like they did in game four against New York. And then game five was close until the ninth inning and there was just no comeback this time.
Yeah, and a lot of people want to blame Francona too, but or blame Chernoff or whoever made up the roster, since it's all kind of mumble-jumbled who's actually in charge over there at this point. But I don't think Yandy Diaz would have done anything different offensively, because really that's where they struggled was offensively. I don't think he probably would have made the second error that Ursula made. He probably would have made that play successfully because he would have thrown to first, whereas Ursula was looking to second. Maybe he would have made that one. Or Ramirez probably would have made it for sure.
Two plays Gonzalez made, I don't think Diaz makes.
Yeah, so there's a lot of different things, and I brought up the loyalty thing because of Tomlin, mostly, because that's what we talked about. He was on the roster for loyalty, and he pitched incredibly well out of the bullpen. Yeah, and they said that that's what cost him being able to start, which is whatever. I think he probably could have started. I think Clevinger could have started. But I think Bauer started because...
You don't got to have him go more than three innings. You just have him pitch three innings.
Yeah, but Bauer pitched a no-hitter through the first, five innings in game one. That's why he started the second one. It's the same reason why the Yankees would use Tanaka twice. You know, like, because he pitched well. CC pitched well, so they used CC twice. That's why they didn't use Sonny Gray. Usually, Sonny Gray pitched game one, you would expect him to come back and pitch game five. No, he didn't because... He didn't pitch game four or game five because they kicked the shit out of him. So they don't, you're not going to go back to the guy who got the shit kicked out of him. And that's why the Indians went with Bauer, because he didn't get the shit kicked out of him the first time. They assumed that he wouldn't, and it didn't work out as well the second time. I really don't know what they could have done better. We said it before, like, the manager can only put out what he has on, the players he has on his team. A hitting coach can only, help in little ways. He can't go up there to the plate and hit for the guys.
I think the only thing you can really, really look at, there's two things to me. The Mike Clevinger thing didn't work out the way they wanted it to, whether they didn't have the opportunities to use him the way they wanted. I think some people thought they were managing for the ALCS and the ALDS.
Yeah, that's what we said going into it, and I do think that that's what the thought was with Kluber. But then he ended up pitching.
I think that applied to Clevinger too. I think that applied to Clevinger. You know, being able to have him, because in the ALCS you do have a stretch where you play 3, 4, and 5 are on back-to-back day, on three straight days. So I think that was part of it. So the Clevenger thing didn't really work out the way they wanted it to, which I can't say I'm surprised. The only thing in hindsight you could say is he probably should have been a starter, but whatever. And that's
mm-hmm.
You understood the reasoning.
But none of these things,
Michael Brantley.
None of these things make up a whole win, though.
No, the Michael Brantley thing kind of looks bad in the aftermath. Like, you know, he only had 3 at bats from what, the time of his injury to the end of the season. And I said, you know, the first pinch he came back and had like a 10-pitch at bat with Lucas Giolito and got a hit. And I said, screw it, if he can have at bats like that, put him on the postseason roster to pinch hit. I don't think he would have ever started. Well, I guess they said he was going to start in game 3 in left field. But the fact that he left the last game, he went home in a walking boot, probably says he wasn't healthy enough to be playing like he should have, like he was.
No, and I wonder if maybe
– over all his ground ball on those pitches.
Early in the season, Chisenhall was one of the best hitters on the Indians, and he was nothing in the postseason. And I wonder if maybe he wasn't healthy, or was this just
– It was spring training.
Was it just Chisenhall reverting back to Chisenhall? I mean, obviously we had Kipnis as well, who did nothing. And
Kipnis actually had a good series offensively.
I think he had a good game 1 or good game 2, but then he really fell off towards the end.
He had the most hits out of anybody in the roster on the postseason.
Yeah, he also had the most at bats.
He got 5 hits. Nobody else got 5 hits. Somebody had to do it. He also got hit off Chapman.
Okay. He didn't look great for, and it was probably because he didn't get enough time back after returning from.
Right, and neither did Chisenhall, neither did Brantley. That's the only thing. Like, I think the only thing you can really question now that we know Brantley left in a walking boot, he probably wasn't healthy enough. And that was maybe a loyalty thing. And I mean, what do? Do you put Diaz on the roster? Do you put Almonte on the roster? I mean,
well, that's what I'm saying. I don't think any of the other options would have been any better.
No, there's nothing they could have done to save it. If everybody hits the way they were going to hit anyway, and if Diaz is there, I don't really see how they were going to change the outcome.
Yeah, the fact is
going into that series that Corey Kluber was going to pitch horrible in 1 start, and he was going to give up
2 home runs to Di Gregorius.
To Di Gregorius in 1 start, you probably would have said, "Wow, they're not going to win that series," and they almost did.
Well, no, I thought they. Well, I wouldn't give up on it because Carrasco, you expect to win, for sure.
Right, but I mean,
and you figure if Bauer's pitching twice,
what kind of chances would you have given them if I would have told you that though? Not great.
Well, I think like. But Kluber could have won that last game. That wasn't his fault. The offense didn't score anything behind him. It's rough.
Right, and he made 2 bad pitches.
Yeah, it's rough to give him shit for that bad game, that last game, because he really pitched fine. It was this game 2 was the problem, and the fact that they won game 2, which is the crazy thing, because they probably should have lost the series in four right. games. It shouldn't have even went to 5. Which is, I mean, it's lucky. I guess that's one of those things where the Yankees won't have something to complain about.
That's the thing, too. Like, I think that says how good this team was. I mean, obviously they're not going to win the World Series, and that's a disappointment because that was the ultimate goal. Because you know they're good, they're a World Series caliber team. But that's how good of a team they were. Is that you know they dominated Game 1 the way they did throughout the 22 game winning streak. They pulled off a ridiculous comeback against a Yankees bullpen that's the best in baseball in game 2. And then they were inches away from sweeping. If Lindor's home run is a few more inches deep, Judge will move on. They sweep. And then they ended up obviously coming back and not playing like they're capable of in games 4 and 5. But, I mean, that's how good they were. They literally, a couple bounces, and I know that's easy to say, but if you look at games 4 and 5, it feels like they just, like everyone wants to say, they choke. But like they were literally inches from sweeping that series. That's how good they were. Is it seems like it feels like they choked the series away. They played horribly. They didn't really play horribly. They were inches away from sweeping. That's how good they were, considering how bad they played the final 2 games.
Yeah, whatever. It's almost
I'm not trying
like
to, spray perfume on shit here, but
yeah, no,
they literally were close.
But again, like I said, they should have lost that game 2 if it was called correctly. or if the if Girardi challenged it correctly, they should have lost that game as well. Now it is commendable how they came back and scored all those runs afterwards. Although a lot of them started off with walks, so that's on the pitcher as much as anything else. But it's up to them to know when you're down by whatever it was, 5 runs or it was more than that.
Right, it was 5.
So when you're down by 5 runs, you know you have to be patient. You know you can't just come up there and swing because a home run is not going to win the game. And that those at-bats that they had when they were down were probably the best at-bats they had. And it's funny because they did get a couple hits off CeCe right before they pulled him. And I
game winner. That was a great at-bat.
Well, no, I'm talking about in game 5.
Oh.
They had a couple hits consecutive off CeCe, and I'm like, and I was thinking at the time, I was like, you know, they're going to have to have like a hit and a home run off CeCe because they're not going to leave him in there to give up 4 straight. As soon as he gives up a couple, they're going to pull him, and they did. Right. And that was pretty much
if they would have done it the first inning, they might have had a shot at it, but not, I think it was the fourth inning they did that.
Yeah, I was thinking that after the game had gone on for a little while and, you know, and CeCe was pitching well, I was like, they're going to pull him as soon as he gets any trouble at all, because they should. They have a really good bullpen. In fact, they have one of the best bullpens in baseball history, so you don't want to mess around against that bullpen. They'll shoot you in their crotch.
Yeah, considering you got lucky in the first game.
Nothing. I swear. I thought you were the audience. You were the target audience for that joke. Somebody else has to listen to this and tell me they thought that was funny. Justin was the target audience, and it completely missed him.
I mean, even if I thought it was funny, I won't give you the satisfaction.
Jesus Christ. You know what sucks, though? What really sucks is the season is so fucking long. And during the season, I never think, oh, this is too long. I enjoy it. Like, I enjoy the whole season as it's going on. But right now, thinking, God damn it, the Indians are going to have to win another 95 games. Mm-hmm. 90 to 100 games or whatever. Win another Central Division because you don't want to mess around with the wild card. Then they get another chance to play in the ALDS. That's a year from now. I have to wait a year for that? It's just so much. At least, I guess, spring.
They had this year where they didn't really ramp it up early. So now you're in the first half where they're.
That doesn't bother me.
No, but I mean.
I don't care.
They had a period this year where they didn't play with the same emotion, they said, because of how hard it is to get up when they were that close. It took them a while.
That was funny. That was an Eric Wedge thing. Remember, Eric Wedge was always terrible in April. Like, he always had a really bad April, and then usually he'd get him to turn around it a little bit. And then one year he was like, you know what, we're going to ramp this thing up and we're going to win April. And they did, and they really pushed in spring training, and they had a great April, and then they sucked. they sucked the rest of the year.
They had one good April under Wedge. I think that was 07.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Well, no, it must have been. I thought it was the year before that, maybe, 06.
Maybe. I think that 06 was not a good start because they had a couple injuries and a lot of.
Okay. I remember that them having a really good start the one year that they were like, we're going to have a good start. And he went out and was like, yes, we're going to do it. And then they were terrible after that.
And that was 08. No, that 08
it could have been. Was it? I don't know. I'm not going to look it up now because I really don't give a shit. I'm just making all this up anyway.
I mean, April's been a bad month at a Francona since he's been here, but
this is. They were above. I believe they were pretty much above 500 the whole year. I think at one point they dipped 2 games under. I just put the numbers in the other day. So
I think they were 10-11 this year in April.
Yeah, that's what I think. They went like 2 games under 500 at one point of the season. I don't remember when it was directly, but I. There was a point where they went under a bit, but they were over most of it, and they were actually in first place for almost the entire season. There was a period in the middle where they lost it for a bit, and then there was a period later on where they were tied or like one game up for a while. But they put it away before the winning streak.
Uh-huh.
It wasn't just the 22-game winning streak. It was the division was put away earlier than that. Whatever. I guess we have a couple weeks before the off season begins. Better next year. Yeah, that's kind of, well. That's kind of a secondary thing, I guess, to worry about, because you never know what these teams are going to do. Minnesota played well this year. They almost made it to the postseason. They made it to the postseason in 2015 with some of the same guys that they have now, Dozier and Maurer and that crew. I wonder if maybe they'll feel like, hey, we can compete now. So they may be adding. I don't think Detroit or Kansas City will add, and obviously Chicago is still a few years away, so they'll probably hang back.
That's what I'm saying.
But Minnesota might compete. But again, who cares what Minnesota does? They won the division by a ton and lost in five games in the ALDS. Like, you have to play more than five postseason games or your season is a total failure. There is no question to me at all. This season was an absolute complete failure.
They improved on last year. Look, I mean,
they didn't improve on anything. They went to the World Series last year. They didn't. I can take a half a success from last season. There's no success at all from this one.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of was World Series or bust. I mean, they did win 100 games, which...
You can put a lot of... They set the record for most strikeouts. They set the highest K for nine. Kluber is probably going to win the Cy Young.
Ramirez will finish top.
Carlos Santana. You've got a couple MVP candidates and Lindor, Ramirez, and Kluber. Santana's going to... A finalist, I believe I saw today, it might be official that he's a top three guy, although Maurer appears to be the favorite.
Along with Hosmer and a reputation vote, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's Maurer. I think they said Maurer was the favorite, though. There's that stuff, but that stuff is kind of secondary. It's not really. There have been seasons where at the end of this year, all I care about is that. Like 2014, it's like all you care about is, oh, Kluber's got it. I remember focusing in on that over day and day after day, like putting in the numbers of who is better, him or Felix. And I haven't, I think I wrote a should he win the Cy Young thing, but I haven't thought about it since then. You know, I looked it up enough just to write a piece, but it's not something on my mind at all. I don't care.
Yeah, I mean, it's a disappointment. I mean, yeah, because I think the hardest part is just waiting until next year. Like, you have to get through, you know, hopefully there's not another slow start where they're off to 48-45. That would be frustrating again for them to do that.
Well, I mean, the injury thing is really the worst part of it, because you're like, okay, well, so last year they were missing Carrasco, and they're missing Brantley, and they're missing Yan Gomes and Roberto Perez for a large – I mean, if you're going to talk about them missing Kipnis and Chisenhall this year, Gomes and Perez were out late into the season last year.
Salazar missed.
They were so they were in a similar situation. Salazar was in a similar situation that he was this year, where he had to be used in relief in the postseason because he didn't get back in time. Of course, last year it wasn't until the World Series that they used him in relief. So they're in such, like...
I'm going to say right now, I hope they go into spring training next year with him as a reliever.
Yeah, I'm not into that, but... They definitely have too many starters.
If they're going to pick up Tomlin's option and you're going to say you have to keep Clevinger in the rotation now, I think their best bet is to put Salazar in the bullpen. Especially considering this is obviously way off topic and way down the road, but considering this is the last year for Allen and Miller, unless you extend either of them, which I don't think they're going to do at this point.
Well, I did want to – we could talk more depth chart.
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay, we could talk more depth chart stuff later on because we got the whole offseason to fuck around with that. The one thing I wanted to do today before we do cut out, since it is the season's officially over, there are five players who have been with the team that either have options or free agents, and then there's, in addition to that, there's Jay Bruce and Jay Bruce, Joe Smith, and Austin Jackson are all free agents upcoming. Now, I think Austin Jackson's an easy guy to let go. Kind of like they let go of Napoli and Davis last year. They brought him in for $1.5 million, and it's kind of like whatever. The other guys are a little easier. We talked about Brantley already. I think you were in saying they probably should use his option as well, or no?
I'm on the fence.
I mean, it's other people's money.
It's going to be hard to replace. It's going to be hard to replace him in the clubhouse. It's going to be hard to replace what he can do when he's healthy. And you can't even – you can't really – like, people want to say injury prone. It's hard – you know, you can't really – I don't know. I mean, I guess you couldn't call it that. By the same definition, you couldn't call Sizemore injury prone, but he kept getting injured. But like, okay.
Well, but okay. Now here's a different thing. Sizemore's injuries, and I did talk to someone about this today on Twitter. Sizemore's injuries were in his knees. Knees are the worst place to get hurt. Maybe the second worst. Shoulders probably worse. But as far as like losing your career, your knees are a terrible place because
I don't think everything's better.
Well, no, but when you have knee surgery and stuff like that, everything you do makes it worse. And that's Alomar had all those knee surgeries over the years. And I know so many guys who've had knee surgery. I've had knee surgery. Like, once you get one done, then you end up getting another one done, and you get another one done, and maybe you can hold it off for a couple of years, but you're pretty much done.
And, not to mention, I think he's one of the first guys in baseball to have microfracture surgery. There wasn't really a whole lot of examples for him to go off of as far as rehab and recovery.
Yeah, and I'll say he's more like the Albert Bell thing. When that happened, he had degenerative hip disease. I'm guessing it's some kind of arthritis condition, something like that. But anything like that where you're really ruining your joints is – and we're talking about like the cartilage and bone here that they're messing up, not necessarily
– ligaments.
It's not muscular. Yeah, muscular ligaments or tendons or anything like that. Whereas – Brantley's, that's not a bone issue. Like, he just sprained his ankle. Now, maybe it's more serious than just a sprained ankle, because I've sprained an ankle and been walking the next day, and it was like, whatever, you know. Maybe not sprained it, whatever you call the lightest version of it. I feel like, and I follow that, the Tribe Twitter doctor. What's his name? I can't remember his name to give him a shout out. There's a one that he writes for one of the sites, I believe, but physical therapist doctor, and he'll tweet out like stuff like that, and he's been saying the whole time as well that, you know, ankle injuries, you don't want to, if you do something while your ankle is injured, you have a much better chance of re-injuring your ankle, but after it's healed completely, it's probably not going to recur, as far as I'm aware. So
maybe. I'm the thing is you like can't call him injury prone because his injuries are not connected. Like,
well, and that's what I'm saying. Like,
worry is nonsensical because his shoulder held up fine this year. There was no issue with his shoulder as far as we know. Then he had the ankle. These two injuries are not connected.
Yeah, that was my point.
So that's gone. That's behind.
After a full season of rest, a full off season of rest, I feel like his ankle will be fine. And the shoulder is one of the most complicated things there is in the human body. And I have very personal experience with this of having shoulder problems. And a lot of times you have pain someplace and they can't tell where the pain is coming from just because it's in someplace. And I think he ended up finding out his pain was coming from his bicep. And that's why he had that surgery last year on his bicep.
Biceps tendonitis, yeah.
So that's like that was causing shoulder pain. So that's not a shoulder problem. But that's where the pain was being felt because that's where all the nerves bunch up in there and stuff. So that is way more serious to me. And if that was the problem that he missed time with this year, I would say yes, don't use the option. But I think there's no reason why he couldn't come back from an ankle injury.
Right. Okay, on the same page. Pick up the option.
Yeah. So the other guys.
Although obviously, they can't make the decision because they have to do it 3 days after the World Series. And if you don't know you're re-signing Santana, I think you do have to.
Well, and that's what – in my article I said he's a great backup plan because he can be DH and you can put Encarnacion at first base if you need to. And then in 2019 you can call up Bobby Bradley if you have to. You know, so you can – there are options down the line, but there's no options next year. You need that emergency thing just in case next year. The guy I think is the easiest decision is Boone Logan. He's got a $7 million option and a $1 million buyout. So it's like a $6 million option, which is he made 5-5 this year.
Yeah.
Are you saying
that's not going to happen? Yeah.
Yeah, that was my opinion, is Tyler Olsen's going to make about $550,000 next year. It's easy. So you just say, okay, Tyler Olsen's making $1,550,000.
That's fine, because you're not going to pay for three lefties, and you still have Kyle Crockett, as much as they don't really seem to like him. You still have him, too.
I have a feeling Crockett's not going to be on the team next year.
Probably not. We can cover, I think he's out of options, isn't he?
Yeah, we could do some real five prep and talk about that later on.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he's gone.
The final option is your favorite pitcher, Josh Tomlin, has a $3 million option with a $750,000 buyout, which is almost nothing in baseball terms.
He's coming back.
The $3 million option is almost nothing. Why do you – is it just a loyalty thing? I mean
– that he's coming back?
He was easily the seventh best starter on the Indians this year.
And you saw how guys got hurt. Like, Ryan Merritt's got one more option, so you're going to leave him in AAA as depth. Adam Plutko might be on the DL for all we know. I don't know. I don't think he's really an option anyway.
I'm not thinking about Plutko or Morimondo or any of those guys, really.
So it's just Salazar, Merritt, and Clevinger, and the first three, and Tomlin.
Well, I mean, but next year you don't
necessarily... For $3 million, you know, a guy like Tomlin would probably get close to 6 or 7 on the free agent market.
Oh no, we saw that because Bartolo Colon got that, and Ari Dickey.
Look what Mike Pelfrey got last year.
Yeah, they all got like $5 to $10 million.
So Josh Tomlin would do the same thing. So it makes a ton of sense to pick his option up because you don't get through the year with less than, you know, 7 starters.
Yeah, what stinks of, but I think they could. I think they could make it, not necessarily with less than 7 starters, but I think they can make it with the guys they have now.
And Cody Anderson will be back next year, although we don't know, you know, what role they'll have him playing. But
yeah, I think he's good enough to be that 7th starter.
Because he's coming back from Tommy John, and he's got options. I wouldn't count on him unless you absolutely have to.
They also have Julian Merriweather, who is in end of the season in AAA. You've got a lot of guys in AA who had really decent seasons, like Matt Esparza, Xiaoqing Chiang ended in AA. Shane Bieber just got up to AA.
Those names don't matter.
Well, but my point is that Josh Tomlin doesn't matter if you're trying to win a World Series. So why, like, I get it. Use the option because it's so cheap. Again, my opinion would be use the option and trade him. I don't think that they would ever do that.
It matters to them. And he pitched well.
Yeah, in that particular game.
He had 2 outings he pitched in. He pitched twice, didn't he?
Yeah, well, okay. No, I mean, but he didn't pitch well in the season. He was terrible in the season. He was very bad.
Yeah, he got the same kind of issues Bauer had in the first half, where he got a little unlucky and kind of... Mm-hmm. I don't know. Did you know, he struggled? I mean, he had a Josh Tomlin first half, which he struggled, but
hey, if people can still hate Almonte because he did steroids once, I think I can dislike Josh Tomlin because he has a 5 ERA for his entire career, I believe.
That's fine. I still think he has some kind of value for this team, so I'm not really too worried about it. They're going to pick the option up. And
yeah, I will say him. I always root for the rookies. I always want to see young blood on the team. I love seeing Mejia up for a little bit. I liked Yandy Diaz. I wish Greg Allen would have started in the postseason. I wish they would have just put him in center field and Kipnis at second. I said that the whole time. I don't think it would have changed the outcome, but it would have looked a little better.
You know, I used to be that way with rookies. I used to love, like, I remember 2012 was such a god-awful year, but I remember couple guys got called up. I'm trying to think who got called up. I know one of them was Thomas Neal. I was really excited for Thomas Neal because I had seen him in Akron, and it was cool to see him go from Double A to the big leagues, and I thought he had a good year. He's a good dude. I used to be like that. I used to look forward to September just for, you know, like 2013, they were obviously in the playoff race, but Jose Ramirez came up, and, you know, that was like, for me at the time, that was almost as exciting as the playoffs. Which is sad because we hadn't been to the playoffs in 2007. So, you know, you find other things to get excited about when you're not in the race, even though they were. But at the time he came up, they weren't like assured a spot. They were, you know, they needed to win 10 in a row to get in. So I don't know. I'm not over the whole rookie thing, but you know, winning ruins everything. Winning.
Well, I'm not just talking about like seeing a guy for the first time. I'm talking about getting a guy playing like legitimate playing time. A guy who you think is going to be a superstar or just a starter in the future. Getting him regular playing time with a veteran team in games that matter, so that he can be a veteran. Because you just talked about Allen and Miller are both going to be free agents after 2018. Brantley is definitely a free agent after 2018. Tomlin is definitely a free agent after 2018. Shaw and Carlos Santana are likely gone after this season, depending on what they do. You need guys to fill those spots. So when are those guys going to come up? Let's say they had brought up Jesus Aguilar and actually given him a decent shot, and he did what he did with the Brewers, at least in the first half of this season. I kind of stopped paying attention after a couple months when the Brewers started to stink. But if he had done that, they would have been like, oh, we have a first baseman. Now, maybe if they did, they wouldn't have signed Encarnacion, which obviously that was a great signing. But, you know, now then they wouldn't have to worry so much about necessarily signing Carlos Santana. They could say, oh, it's okay, we got Aguilar there. They don't, like, you kind of get put behind. And because they went with such a veteran bullpen this year, other than Tyler Olson, you really didn't add anybody else to the mix. I mean, maybe Nick Goody's really young, so I guess you got Goody. But I don't know if Goody is, like, future closer material. I think he may be a future Brian Shaw type, but I can't imagine. Yeah, I don't know that he's even going to be that good.
I mean, it's hard for any. You can't really pick any reliever to lead the league in appearances out of the bullpen over a five-year period. You know, it's hard to say that anybody can be Brian Shaw because, you know, Brian Shaw stayed healthy and was consistent over a 5-year period. You can't really say anything about that in any pitcher.
No, but my point is they didn't try. They didn't try anybody this year other than Goody. They were trying to win. Yeah, and they won by 30 games, and then they lost the ALDS. Like, you have to combine these things. You can't just say they won the division. They really probably should have tried out some of these other guys a little more. They should have played Mejia a little more. They should have got him ready because now you got to worry. Like, because Mejia should be on the opening day roster next year, but now I don't know that he will be. And they may play around with some stuff for a while and keep him down. We'll cover more of this stuff as the off season goes on. I will say I've seen Mejia play, but not third base. He's been DHing.
Yeah, he hasn't played third yet.
I'm going tomorrow, hopefully. It may be one of those things they talk about but never actually happens.
I'm kind of curious why he's not seeing first base. You would think that with Santana leaving.
Yeah, that would be really smart.
He would try. I mean, I don't think everyone says, you know, maybe you can do a fitness for Michael Brantley to first base. Maybe, but.
Well, yeah, I mean, honestly, for next year, I would.
Great option there because he's so small like Santana was.
Yeah, I would try Brantley there. If you can't do it, just put Encarnacion there and wait for Bobby Bradley. Bobby Bradley is also in the AFL right now. Which means maybe sometimes when they're in the AFL, like Zimmer was in the AFL, sometimes that means that they're going to try to bring them up the next year. Zimmer and Allen were both in last year, and they both came up in 2017. So these guys could all be potential 2018 calls. Not maybe. Krieger, but the other guys. Not Linares, but the other guys. Some of these guys.
No, probably not Sean Brady either, but yeah.
Oh, I haven't seen him play it either. I saw Linares. He looked really good.
Brady pitched yesterday and struck out 5 in 3 innings.
I did not go yesterday, so I didn't see it. I was at the Cardinals game.
That was a poor choice by you.
Yeah, it is what it is.
You gotta pay the bills.
I will. We will. Maybe next week. We'll see. I'll probably do these a little more sporadically during the off season.
I think as we get news, we'll do it. I'm not really.
Well, there's always lots of really important things to talk about.
Well, I mean, you could speculate, but I mean, I'd rather just wait till we have some concrete news. At this point,
just wait for the all Josh Tomlin episode. It's coming.
Yeah, I can't wait.
Tomlin from front to back.
So you're declaring the entire season a full disappointment, right?
Yes, the 2017 season. Yeah.
Okay. I do not follow that logic. I don't think the season's a total disappointment. They didn't win the championship, and it sucks off the way to year. And the worst part is, you know, if Kluber was hurt, we'll never know, I don't think. The worst part is, you know, Kluber and Carrasco are going to be a year older next year, and nothing is guaranteed with pitchers or anybody, you know, as far as injuries. But, I mean, the older those two get, the less likely the chances are of them staying. I thought we thought we were going to see a drop-off from Kluber after 2014, and he didn't have a great 2015, but I mean, that was a little bit of bad luck because of the defense. Obviously, he was great last year, but, you know, with the back injury this year, back injuries don't go away easily. And, you know, he's going to be 32, and I think Carrasco's going to be 31. Those are the two guys you need at the top of your game to win a World Series. I mean, right now, if you don't have those two guys at their peak, then your chances to win a World Series are a little less. I don't think there's anything to indicate that neither of them are going to see a decline next year, because like Felix Hernandez had a really some issues in 2015. I remember he wasn't getting guys to swing and miss as much. He was walking more as velocity was down. Everyone thought that he was going to have a rough 2016. He ended up, you know, signs are pointing downwards, and you know, he did have a bad 2016, and now he's not King Felix anymore. With Kluber and Carrasco, I don't, you know, there's neither of those signs. Both guys' velocities were about normal. Kluber's was down a little bit, but both of them, you know, got as many strikeouts as ever, and, you know, Carrasco had his first 200-inning season ever, so nothing to indicate either of those guys are going to be hitting any sort of decline next year, but you just never know. I mean, things
happen. I'll give you this much. Just like a trade where you pick up a minor leaguer, I will say that this season was not a total failure if the Indians win the World Series next year. I'll say that they needed this one to get there, I guess.
Maybe.
That's how this season wouldn't be a total failure. Because, we talked about, like you just said, it was Carrasco's first 200-inning season. Well, maybe he was pushed to the limit. I don't know. Maybe, I remember giving up on Verlander a few years ago. He had a bad year after he pitched like 250 innings in the regular season, and they went to the World Series. Mm-hmm. And I probably have those numbers wrong, what year happened or whatever.
13?
But I remember whatever it was, and then after the World Series, the next year after the World Series, or it may have been the ALCS or something like that, but
I guess 2012. Anyway, yeah, you're right. Go ahead.
Verlander had one really bad year, and I wrote him off for his whole career. I was like, he's done. There's no way. He has too many innings. He's too old, whatever. And now he's a Cy Young contender. He should have won the Cy Young last year. And he's been pitching well this year, too. So maybe, you know, I wrote him off way too early. So I'm not going to give up on a guy just because he's old. Joe Smith is 34.
And just had the best year of his career.
Yeah. And man, did he have a good season this year. And you look at that ERA and it doesn't look great. But look at all of his – he didn't walk a batter for the Indians. I can't believe – I cannot believe how good he was this year for the Indians. So – and I wrote that too. So I guess we'll leave with the plugs, right? Right now and the last few days and coming up all next week, the content on Burning River Baseball is all focused on the first decisions the Indians have to make in the offseason. So like the one that came out on Monday was about Michael Brantley. I got one coming out on Boone Logan. I got one coming out on, I'm not doing Josh Tomlin. I'm making Justin do Josh Tomlin, because you know what I'm going to say. but these are, you know, they'll be coming out this week, and, I did one for Joe Smith and for one for Brian Shaw. And my conclusion on that was I'd almost rather see them sign Smith because I consider them very similar pitchers as far as what their outcomes are going to be. And I'd go with the older guy for less money. Less money and less years. Because I think Shaw is going to make a ton of money this offseason.
Yeah, Shaw is going to.
I think he's going to blow it up.
Everyone was saying he could get between $7 to $9 million a year, depending on where.
I think he's going to get more than that because there were pitchers that are lesser than Shaw that made 10 last year.
Yeah.
So that got 10 a year after last year. So I'm thinking he's getting at least 3 years and
30 at least.
Yeah. And I think Cody Allen
is going to make $10 million according to MLB trade rumors arbitration.
Oh, yeah, that's just arbitration. In free agency, I could picture Miller getting probably about $18 million and Allen probably getting at least 15. A year,
especially so. We look, you know, you look at the Yankees bullpen, and everyone's going to try to.
And yeah, especially if you look at how many more innings these guys are pitching, how many more games they're playing per season, how important these pitchers are to a team, they're going to start making money that is usually reserved for position players. And I don't think the Indians are going to spend that because they need to spend it on position players.
All the more reason to put Danny Salazar in the bullpen. Just saying.
Okay, well, maybe we'll talk about that again in 3 years.
Oh, good, good. All the reason to extend Zach.
Oh, God.
How about that? Zach, I don't have a good Zach song. I don't have a good Danny song either, I guess.
Danny Boy, isn't that a song?
Danny, oh, I need you so.
Isn't it Danny Boy?
That's the Cars. Yeah, but that sucks. I started saying that. That one sucks.
Chumbawamba?
Yep. Danny Boy?
Isn't that Chumbawamba?
No, it's like an old Irish song from like the...
Not the song. There's a lyric
1700s.
In there. 1700s. Tub-thumping. There's a lyric in Tub-thumping of Chumbawamba that says Danny Boy.
I don't remember that.
This is really I'm really curious now.
I'm supposed to remember the entire lyrics of that one-hit wonder?
He sings a song that reminds him of the best times. This is very good for the podcast, see? Song that reminds him of the good times. Sing the song that reminds him of better times. Oh, Danny Boy. Danny Boy, Danny Boy. I get knocked down, but I get up again. That's like the Indian season.
All right, let's just count that as our song and end. We'll see you guys next time.
Yeah, whatever that is.